You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form Laurent, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the Long Form Conversations podcast from New York. I'm Kelsey Bailey. You previously heard some episodes from UCB LA, but we're back in New York, baby, and we've got another round of our ongoing Laurent. Today, my guest is James Dwyer, who improv fans might know from the Herald team Good Girl, The Law Firm, One Man Herald, the inventor of Poha,
oh,
A Big Dumb Thing. And so much more. Hi, James. Welcome.
Hi, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm really ready for this. I did a lot of extensive research on you, so get ready.
Okay. I'm ready as hell.
I guess
I'm as ready
one
as
thing,
ever be.
Yeah. When I read your bio on the New York Improv team's pages,
so
that I can only imagine was written before you were...
On a team.
Because you really thanked all of your teachers. You plugged your own indie show that you had.
What was it called?
It was your monthly show with Tesla. And you went into
a
long description of what the show was. It sounded great. You should bring it back.
It was a really fun show.
I believe it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I saw on your bio was that you signed up to take improv classes without ever having seen improv. Is that true? Or is that just
I wrote that in my bio?
Was that just a joke?
No, that's
it's
not
true.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow.
Yeah, I signed up for a class so I went to Rutgers University, New Jersey.
What's Rutgers' mascot?
It's the Knight, Scarlet Knight.
Whoa, that sounds really beautiful.
There's two versions of it. One is one of those big foam head mascots, and then the other version's a man in a very heavy and hot looking red scarlet knight costume.
Wow.
And he goes on a horse.
That's cool.
I think, yeah.
You know, so many people probably auditioned for that.
Yeah, I bet there's one guy who's been doing it forever, though, if I had to guess. Mm-hmm. And then there used to be a canon. This is not what we're here to talk about.
No, sorry. That's the Rutgers Improv podcast.
Yeah, one day. One day I'll book that one. Yeah, I was at Rutgers my senior year of college when I started taking classes at UCB. One day in particular, I was living in a house. I lived in a house with four other dudes, a regular dude house. And the girlfriend of one of my housemates was doing stuff at the Pit at the time. And she was like, you should sign up for a class. You'd love it. And we were all drunk. And I signed up drunkenly for a class I could barely afford. And then I started taking improv.
Whoa. So wait, did you do any performing in college? Or it was just like you were like the funny one of your friends and they were like, you would be great at this.
Yeah, I was like the funny, squirmy freak. And I also would like write stand-up and I'd been doing that for a few years. But it would just had a notebook full of weird. I mean, I definitely threw it away out of shame. Is a shame.
I
wish I still had it. It's such a dang crime.
A lot of people would come to see you just even read from that notebook.
I wish I still had it. It was
so you never even performed stand-up with it?
No. I would specifically had a ritual where once a week I would go to the Sack, which is a lounge area with a big window that overlooks the Raritan River, which is the world's fucking ugliest river.
Okay.
I would sit there in front of the window and think and write new jokes.
Wow, the process.
But then I did improv instead, and I really enjoyed it.
Great.
So yeah, that's how I got started, and I was hooked right away.
Hooked right away.
Started taking class. Took my class with Betsy Stover. Wonderful.
Oh
yeah. And then let me list all my teachers and thank them personally.
Yeah, if you don't have time to do that now, you can direct people to NewYorkImprovTeams.com.
Oh my god.
And look up James Dwyer.
That's something.
He would like to thank them for helping him become the improviser he is today, and so much more.
Ew,
if I don't
I
know
say
if that's
that?
The exact quote, but it's along those lines. I read it and I was like, dang, if you think I'm not dragging him for this, I don't even care.
Ugh, I love that.
So what year did you, like, when was this?
2008. Yeah. I signed up, I guess, in the fall of 2007 to start in 2008.
And did you just take all of your classes, like, back to back? Like,
yeah, pretty much. Nice. Back to back. I was just chaining them together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, within a year, I auditioned for my first Herald team, and that was a hilarious disaster.
Oh, you didn't get on?
Surprise, surprise. the squirmy freak didn't get on his first try.
The squirmy stand-up comedian genius freak.
Oh, true genius freak.
So do you remember, like, in your process of classes, like, when it finally started to, like, click for you? Or, like, when you were finally like, oh, yeah, I should pursue this even more so, as opposed to just, like, a fun extracurricular from college?
I think for me, the sad truth, I think, of my life at that time was like, well, I finally found something I like. Like,
yeah.
It was, I didn't have much going on. I had friends who were fun, classes I hated.
Sure.
I was like an economics major.
Whoa.
In college, and a financial analyst. When I got out of college, I worked at Teachers College, Columbia University, in the budget department there. So I didn't enjoy anything I was doing except for improv, and all I knew was that I liked it, so I had to do it all the time. So it took a while for me to decide, like, oh, I'm really good at this.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, oh, it feels good when people liked it, you know, instead of it being just this pathetic, not pathetic, but like just this little thing that I enjoyed. It became, I think 3 years in, I finally was like, I really think I'm good at this.
Yeah.
Without being like, always not room, like, for improvement.
Sure. But, like, just recognizing that, like, I'm not wasting my time or other people's time that I'm begging them to come to my improv shows in Long Island City at 10:30 at night or wherever.
Yeah. There was a while, though. Like, right before I got on a team, I would say I was definitely in one of those points where I was like, I'm screwed. Or not screwed, but, like, this is not going to happen. I got to figure something out. I was, like, thinking about going to grad school at one point. And then I got on a Herald team, Deckard, and I just started doing that a lot. And I was like, okay, just put your head down and work hard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, just, you know, don't make any waves. Like, I was, like, such a freak about it in my head, trying so hard to pretend like I was actually pretty chill about it.
About being on a Herald team?
Mm-hmm. But I was, like, freaking out internally.
How many times did you audition until you got on?
I think 3 or 4.
Yeah?
Might have been 4.
Do you remember any moments from your auditions where you're like, I know exactly what I did wrong?
I specifically remember doing a callback. The only time I had a callback, actually, because the round where I got on was like this weird invite-only thing.
Mm-hmm. That was the same for me.
Yeah. It was, I walked onto a group game and I did a tag out. I tagged everyone out of the group game.
Okay.
And I tagged.
Had you been in within the scene, or were you?
I don't remember, but I tagged everyone out so that I could play Hitler, and I played that to silence. and I could not possibly tell you what I think. There was a way in which it absolutely, like, I didn't just, like, out of nowhere be like, this scene needs Hitler. Like, I didn't. I wasn't like this should be funny as hell. Like, there was definitely some kind of Nazi
there was a
shit
connection.
Going.
Okay.
There was some. It was really just the height of good comedy,
right?
But I definitely, I remember, like, just the silence in the room was.
Do you remember
deafening.
Anyone who was, like, on the panel, like,
oh,
just,
yeah,
like, making
I,
eye contact?
No, they,
like,
all averted eye contact on that. Are you kidding? Everybody looked down, and their eyes stayed down. Or up into the air. Like, no one was looking at me at that point. At that point, everyone was finding a spot that they could focus on that wasn't the spot where James Dwyer tagged everyone out to play Hitler. It never feels better to play Hitler than when you it was definitely wrong.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I feel like I've probably done that.
I've never been Hitler in a scene since, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's like a good...
That's a good
lesson
takeaway.
For yourself.
Yeah. I mean,
you
that's,
learn from that moment.
The worst part is that's not even the good takeaway.
Sure.
That's like...
Wow, I can't believe you've never played Hitler again.
I wonder how true that is. Now I'm thinking about it.
Maybe you played a Nazi, but not the man himself. The man, the myth, the legend.
Yeah. There's just really a history of good choices in my work, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just one of them. Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Really bad.
So, like...
I did not get on that round.
Sure. Well... You came back the next year and didn't play Hitler, and they're like, okay, he's learning.
Famously, though, I've always said I was really pissed I didn't get on for that round.
Really?
No.
Famously?
If somebody was, like, angry, it's like, well, I finally got on, but you guys really whiffed on the previous round because that was the good one.
The
you just
is,
got me in on a stinker.
I for sure think there's probably people who are like
definitely.
That.
I got to find them.
We know. You know who you are. You're listening right now.
I got two guesses, and I can't. I won't.
No,
but
we're not. This is. It's not
It's
the
not
drag
that.
Podcast.
No. We just drag my name through them. I want to write and stuff on
improv. Right.
And that's fair.
Right.
And
honestly,
that's what it's all about.
You put it out there, you're allowed to.
You put
to.
It out there, I'm going to take it back in.
So speaking of auditions, just because, you know, that season is coming up once again, what's something, as someone who has probably sat in on a bunch of auditions or probably coached a bunch of people who are about to go in an audition, maybe for a first-timer or maybe for someone who's done it a bunch of times, what's something that you think you see people fall into a lot, aside from just, like, straight-up freak-out nerves?
Sure. Aside, like, a bad habit?
Yeah.
Well, a thing I've been telling people, and I'm like, I don't like to give, like, ascribe a general, like, do this.
Right.
But I'm noticing a pretty bad habit that crops up a lot of times is, and I think it's just a general bad habit that happens with improv a lot, but it really becomes prevalent during these things, is suddenly it's two people who know nothing about each other in every scene.
Yeah.
And they're reacting to everything for the first time once again. And so it's like, well, if you both know each other and make choices as if, like, don't be surprised that they're being a freak again. Maybe it's more like you forgot why they've always been a freak. You know, say we got hot scene freak walks in, coming in hot. And you got to just, like, be like, it's more like a this again, or, like, label it, frame it, instead of just freaking out the whole scene and fighting the whole scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say know each other.
Know each other.
Yeah, because nobody ever does.
No one ever does. And also, that's a good point of it just devolves into a fight, I feel like.
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of scenes. Like people, I mean, the real thing is it's the nerves is the big one.
Oh, yeah.
People come in and seem the least nervous just tend to stand out because they seem to improvise more freely.
Mm-hmm. And they could be fooling us all. Who knows?
Yeah, they could be just,
They could be. Who knows? So getting back to Harold and your first night on Harold, you said you kind of just kept your head down. Was it that just like freaking out of, oh, I finally achieved what I wanted, or feeling like...
Well, you know what it was? I was like freaking out I achieved what I wanted, which felt so good to like, I couldn't remember a thing before that where I'd like done a creative thing and achieved it in some capacity like that.
Right.
Like a big goal that felt unachievable I achieved. But I think part of it was, like, I remember thinking, like, when I was on my indie teams, I would once in a while be the person who sends a very long email. Not, like, mean or anything, but it's like, yo, chill. Like, I would have people be like, James, it's just a show. And be like, that's a good point. And I had to, like, be like that about Harold. And I was like, I want to be more chill.
Yeah.
And not stress people out more than
what were like some
out.
Of the long emails you would send
when I hosted
remember.
A show with Tesla.
Mm-hmm. I've heard about it.
Yep, because I wrote a long paragraph about it. When I hosted a show with them, my name was on the contract with the Players Theater, and I would like be in charge of it, sort of. I mean, everyone shared responsibility, but I would the day of the show send these long emails. I remember the first time we had our show, I sent an email with a minute-by-minute breakdown of how the show should go. And people were like, yo, what? What is this? And I printed it out, I believe. And that was not okay. So I've learned a lot. Mostly my big lesson has been to learn to cool it.
Cool it. Yeah, stop.
To care a little less. Not to not care, but don't be a dang freak about it.
Don't be a dictator. Don't be Hitler.
Right. And I would never, like, get mad. Well, I wouldn't, like, yell at people or, like, fight with them. It would be more like, you would just be like, you're being too intense. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, all right. So I learned that lesson. Okay. And I didn't want to do that on Harold.
Sure. So you guys were together for one year?
Deckard was like 6 months.
Oh, 6 months.
Yeah, we had like a half cycle.
Oh, is that because you got in for like
the
middle?
Invite? Okay. Yeah, in the invite only.
Was that hard, like walking onto a team that had already been established or?
No, it was, we hadn't been. It was all brand new people.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. We were all 8 of us had never been on Herald Night before.
Oh, that's nice.
Which was fun, but also I think it just was like we had a rough time, I think. It was like all really great people, but it just never quite clicked. I think we were a little in our heads. We wanted to be amazing right out of the gate, and we just, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I think that like we were a little too hard on ourselves at times.
Yeah. And so after the 6 months then, is that when you were on Good Girl?
Good Girl. I was on that for
that was like
I don't
a
remember
couple,
a while.
There was a couple iterations of that.
Yeah, that team had a lot of, like 10 or 11 different people on it over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really fun. I still hang out with, it's like a weird, I would say we're more of a group of friends than a Herald team.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a fun time. There were some really fun shows that we did. And then after that, I got asked to do the law firm.
Nice.
And that's where I am now.
So when you were on Herald, do you remember like what type of openings you guys did or was it?
Yeah. We did, well, with Good Girl, we did a scene painting for a long time and I really liked that. I thought it was good for us. Trying to think. Oh, on Deckard, we famously started with no opening.
That's what my current Herald team does.
Oh, yeah?
Is no opening.
Well, but you guys have been around. You guys are all more experienced.
Sure.
But we were, point being, we should have done an opening.
Yeah. I find it very hard.
I love openings.
I went from, me too.
I like premise and.
This is my second Herald team I've been on.
Mm.
And so I think the idea of having no opening and like taking away like, oh, you took out my ladder, and now I just have to kind of hang here and find a premise on my own.
Especially
with
the Herald, it's already so much work.
Yeah.
And, like, to then build it off of nothing. A thing I like about an opening in a Herald is that you can have a structured one and you just pull premises, right? Or it can fully dictate the entire direction of the show if you do something more organic. And I go back and forth on it. I really love organic stuff if it's super committed. And then premise stuff is really fun, too. I think that's just a skill everyone at UCB kind of just has to be good at.
Yeah.
Eventually, especially on the weekend, all we do, you know, we do like interviews, we talk to the audience a lot. It's all premise.
Yeah.
But in a less structured way, you know, not like a pattern game where you get these precise premises.
Yeah. Do you like, I guess you never really had to do pattern game.
I was never – Noelle Deckard at one point was ordered to do pattern game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because our coach, Terry Withers, was like, you know, you guys really got to start doing an opening. And we were like, no. We were psychos. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
It was like, no, Terry, we won't be doing that. That's not how it works,
Did
Terry.
Did he quit?
No.
Dang.
I think he like, I don't know. He would come in
it.
And he'd be like, I think he did kind of. He was kind of like, all right. I think he like kind of was like a masochist in the way he continued to coach us.
Yeah.
Because we were more than one practice. He'd be like, you know, Nate's really thinks you guys should do an opening. And then we'd be like, they have to tell us to do it. Like we were crazy.
And
about
he was like,
it.
This is kind of
and then Nate
him telling
like,
you
okay,
it was through
guys,
me.
Yeah. You're doing a pattern game now because you couldn't just do an opening. And we were ordered to do a pattern game. And the worst, we were so garbage about it too. He was like, all right, you got to do pattern game for at least a couple months or something like that. He didn't say a precise time. But because he had said something like a couple months, we were like, well, it's been 2 months. And we just started doing a new opening after that. We did not consult with him about it. And we started doing a sound and movement. And I remember the first show where we did it. And it was so deeply bad.
Was it just like no one paying attention to each other? Or what makes
for
a bad sound and movement?
We were missing each other's moves. We weren't on the same page. At one point, people sort of got run over by an airplane or something like that. But it wasn't like fully there. I remember we all walked from the back line or walked to the back line after that, and I remember thinking like, oh no.
Had you guys even practiced the sound and movement, or
yeah,
did you just like
decide
in the green
room? I think Finelli was coaching us at the time, and we were working on it. I think we were maybe an uncoachable team with whatever was going on in our heads at the time. We all like liked each other, but it didn't quite click.
Yeah. Cool. So what was it like moving then from Herald Night to the weekend? Did you have that same kind of anxiety that you had when you were first on a Herald team, or was it kind of like now I have freedom to do whatever.
When I joined the weekend, I think I just started doing Torco occasionally too, which had been like a nice kind of primer or warm up almost for doing the weekend. I was a little nervous first because nobody was like a peer of mine on my team when I first joined. Everybody in my eyes, I'm like, I had seen them perform on Herald Night when I was a student. So I was a little intimidated at first. But everyone was really fun and nice. And then we also, like, slowly over time added more people who I know, like Sean Disson, I think we added next, and who, you know, of course, is great. And as over the years, especially, it's the makeup of the team. It was always really fun, though, and I learned a lot performing with them. But that team's changed so much since I joined. But there was some anxiety, yeah.
Yeah. Do you find that you play differently, whether it's, you know, being on a weekend team and not having, like, a strict Herald form or, like, maybe the audience? Like, do you find that you play a little bit, I don't know, different than you did on Herald Night than you do on the weekend, or maybe the approach is a little bit different?
I think so. I think I fall into – it's weird. I play a freak a lot in my scenes, but I think I straight man a lot more than I used to. I don't know that I'm necessarily good at it, but I try to be. And I think also a thing that has actually affected the way I play more than anything is just like teaching. I think teaching has made me a better improviser because I've had to like think about why things are not working.
Sure.
And all that instead of just like, oh, it didn't work. Oh, okay. after every scene I go, oh, okay.
Okay. And then they know that they must edit that. You've reached your limit.
Hey, come on now. All right.
Okay.
I'm done.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. I coach, and sometimes I find, like, the more that I'm coaching, if I'm doing too much, then I get too in my head as a player because I'm like, well, I got to follow the rules that I told blah, 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 blah about, you know, playing your base reality and resting and all of that.
I got a little in my head about that for a bit.
Yeah.
But then there was a stretch where I was convinced. So there was a while where I would teach on Friday nights right before law firm. And I was convinced, actually, that if I didn't teach, I would always have a bad show.
Really?
Yep. It was not a good headspace. But eventually I like stopped teaching on Fridays anyway. But I was somehow convinced that it was a good mental warm-up for me to do good improv.
Wow.
Which I can't believe because I can't watch improv before I perform. That messes with my head.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that was working.
So for teaching, so you teach all levels, everything from 101 all the way to ASPs. What's like your favorite level to teach?
I think, it's hard to say. I think I like 401. For a while it was my favorite, and I think I still really enjoy teaching 401. I like teaching all of them.
Yeah.
401 I like. Because I can kind of really just focus on each, you know, what do these people need to work on? I loved teaching an ASP where I kind of didn't totally know what it was going to be, but I knew it would be weird.
is what you're referring to Poha?
Yeah.
Yeah. Poha. For those of you listening in the flyover states who might not have come to one of the shows, Poha stands for Post Herald.
Yeah, it's the Post Herald movement.
Would you like to explain it a little bit? Because I don't know how to.
The thing is, I don't know if people know this, but we're in the middle of a Post Herald moment.
Oh my God.
No, I'm being garbage.
No, do it.
Poha. You know, before there was the Herald, there was just Prov. And even after the Herald, there is still Prov. And even during the Herald, there is still Prov. And we decided to explore basically the pitch of the class is we're going to put an experimental theater lens on the Herald and see what happens. So, like, it had to perform, like, approach it as if this is experimental theater. But also, like, the thing that really kind of just happened as the class went was that it was like, oh, we're just going to do very sincere, committed work. And commit in a way that we don't feel like we even, like, I don't know that commitment's necessarily a problem at UCB, but it doesn't feel like there's a space to commit like that sometimes.
Yeah. Or just even time to do.
I know.
Something that's really grounded and slow and committed. And
so we would just, like, try stuff in class all the time. And sometimes we'd be like, that worked. And sometimes we'd be like, that sucked.
Yeah.
But people were just like very open and trusting each other and honest. And it was very cool to see that happen in that class.
So for Poha, just because from mm-hmm. what I saw, I think I maybe caught it on a night where everything was crazy. I caught it on last Herald night.
Oh, that was a very crazy night.
Yeah, that was a crazy night for...
Wouldn't normally be 17 people
right.
on stage.
So like what was there a format to it or was it kind
it's
of just...
It's technically a Herald.
Okay.
Yeah, we performed the Herald in the post-Herald way, which is just to mean that it can lose its shape at times, but mm-hmm. we're sort of kind of keeping track of all of it.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to find game, we're trying to find a central theme or message to the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, I don't even think when they would perform it, they're thinking that way anymore. It's just like this scene, they're not thinking, they're just performing it. I don't know how else to put it. I love it. It's like my favorite. It made me like not want to do normal improv for a little
yeah.
bit because it's so much more fun and rewarding and exciting.
When you first imagined it, did you think that adding the layer of like experimental theater was kind of like being satirical, or did you really want to take it seriously as like, let's really make this experimental theater?
My hope for it was that it would like blur the line in a way that was almost like, I can't tell if these guys are serious or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think at times it did that, but then it became more just experimental theater and more just like honest improv. But then it was still amazing and hilarious at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like this is, you know, I remember when I first started doing improv, you hear teachers sometimes say, and I don't hear as much anymore, but obviously I'm not being taught anymore, but it is just like follow the rules, do the stuff, don't try to be funny. But even more than don't try to be funny, it's like commit fully to like be a good actor and be a good listener and affect each other. And by doing all the good improv rules, you'll accidentally make funny things happen. And it felt like in Poha, we were like in a way that didn't feel like we're not worried about game. So we were making real discoveries in scenes that I don't think we get to do in such an exciting way anymore, or not as often.
Mm-hmm.
We still do, but often we're coming off an opening, or if we do, we're trying to not force it in a bad way, but we're trying to be like, oh, I got to frame that, you know?
Right. Because there's so many other things swirling around that you feel like you have to hit that you can't
yeah.
just allow something to
And you
to
need
breathe.
Something, especially for a first beat. If you're going to have a second beat, you're like, well, I got to get something out of this.
Yes.
So.
And then also you're thinking, well, this scene feels like it's going too long. Am I doing mm-hmm. too long of a Herald? Am I going to get blacked out early?
Yeah.
All of these things to that
I know.
Aren't very Poha.
No, they're just not very Poha. And there was like awful, like it became like this gross bit of just like saying things like, that's Poha. And we were just like, tonight we Poha, like bullshit like that.
Yeah.
But it's just fun. And they were all so down for like that element
yeah.
of it too.
What a great group of committed people.
Oh my God, phenomenal.
No one that was like,
yeah,
just
everybody
trying
just
to...
like brought it. And everybody also, like, a lot of people like even who felt challenged by it really rose to the occasion.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
Do you want to teach it again?
I don't know.
Whoa. Wow. This is breaking Poha news. Wow.
I really don't know. I think I'd rather do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I don't know, it would feel like... Also, they named themselves. Originally, it was called, like, Broken Heralds or something
oh,
like
okay.
that. And the reason I did it even is only... I had been trying to think of an ASP to pitch to Kevin, and Kevin reached out to me and was like, oh, you should do something, like, that's kind of inspired by, like, One Man Herald
mm-hmm.
or... like a blend of that and like Strife or something.
Right.
And he's like, you should call it like Broken Heralds or something. I was like, all right.
Okay.
And then I did that. So if he hadn't reached out to me, I don't know if I ever would have done it. A lot of dumb little stuff. They're also so lucky they got to do like that weird, crazy, long Herald night that we all did.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a blast.
Yeah.
I want to do that again.
I know.
It was like one of my favorite nights at the theater.
It was very good energy.
Yeah, good eng.
It was good eng.
Yeah.
So... just sort of going back to teaching and
yeah.
just because you've probably seen a lot of things, is there anything, we talked a little bit about like what you've been noticing in auditions of like maybe bad habits or like just
oh,
things,
sure.
trends that students seem to be falling into. Is there anything recently that you're noticing a lot and maybe it's a recent trend in what people are playing or like something that's kind of like sticking out to you?
I don't know if it's a definite trend, but I think I notice, and it might be just something you would always notice teaching,
mm-hmm.
but I really feel like it's rare to see people commit towards a non-comedic commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Even like every scene has a comedic commitment to it. And then those things, when those don't work, those feel awful.
Right.
Like, but if we were just commit to more sort of grounded acting, and then still when we do find a game, really lean into it, right? Mm-hmm. I think it would pop a lot better. So I think there's a lot of, well, specifically ironic detachment, you know, teachers would always talk about it, but I feel like it's, oh, it doesn't get called out the way it's supposed to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's not getting called out or who knows. But it feels like there's like erratic detachment is kind of actually getting by in a way that it didn't used to, where it's like people will say things ironically a lot,
right,
in a lot of their scenes and still get to laugh. And so no one's calling it out.
Yeah.
So I think ironic detachment is just like very pervasive right now.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know what to do about it other than yell at people
and
commit.
And scream.
Commit! Yeah. No, I do. I scream at my students every single day.
No, I've seen, and, we've seen a big drop in numbers and people signing up for
I bring a glass into the room just to smash it. And then I say, you did the worst scene. Pick up every piece with your bare hands.
And then they said, this is my first 101 class. I wasn't even here.
And then I'll say, lesson one. And then I don't know where it goes. All right, I lost that train of thought. That stuff's not really true, though.
Yeah.
It turns out I was making that up.
That was, sorry. Sorry, listeners at home.
Sorry.
That's not real.
I'm a dang dirty liar.
That's right.
Yeah.
So just like getting into, I have some other just like fun, stupid questions that I want to ask that aren't like particular to anything biographical for you. But like what's... who's like an improviser that maybe when you were coming up or maybe that you even have right now that you looked up to in a way and you think maybe influenced the way that you play or made you want to strive to play the way that they do?
Yeah. I think when I was coming up, I would say I thought that, I mean, I really thought like Zach Woods and... Bobby Moynihan. I would go see Stepfathers a lot, so it cracked me up so much. Bobby Moynihan was probably the one, because I remember when he got on SNL, I remember telling like a friend of mine as if they would care.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's that? What are you talking about?
Did you reference him as like someone like, oh yeah, I know this guy that got on SNL?
I was definitely gross, yeah. I was definitely gross about it. But I think Bobby Moynihan was a guy who I definitely loved watching. And kind of looked up to as an improviser.
Mm-hmm.
And even as I started doing more stuff, you know, I loved, I mean, I loved watching like John Lutz and, you know, Pete Grosser and what's his name, you know, Two Square, all that. Those guys were, when I started seeing them, I was like, whoa.
The hardest I've ever laughed.
Becky Drysdale, too.
Watching an improv show was watching a Two Square show.
Oh, yeah. I one time, so I used to come in from Jersey, and I one time went with a friend and from Jersey. We got there early, so we went to Rose Pizza in Penn Station, where you can buy a giant-ass beer, like a 40-ounce beer for $3.
Wow.
And we drank the whole thing, and then we went to the Two Square show. And I remember, like, halfway through the show, I was like, I'm definitely going to piss myself. Like, I have to get up and pee. But I refused to get up because I didn't want to miss any of it.
Wow.
So I waited till the end to pee, and I think I did like some real lasting damage. yeah. I also remember one time when I was a student, I went to ASCAT, and a guy, a very drunk man, came up to me after and goes, and this was an ASCAT that John Lutz was in. He goes, hey, man, awesome show. So he confused me for John Lutz. And I was just like, and I was like, yes. Like, I was like, yeah.
Maybe I'll try and show up next week and just get on
that
stage.
Maybe I'll just,
stage.
Like, replace him.
Have like, you done ASCAP?
Once, yeah.
How was that? Was that like
it was such a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just before Christmas. It was so much fun.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the top of the top.
Yeah. You know? Check it off.
Check it off the list.
Yeah. It's very wild.
My other question was, like, is there anyone, whether it's someone that you've seen performing or someone that you've taught that, like, you think is very good and deserves to get a shout-out?
Oh, boy.
Because, honestly, I can't imagine something more exciting than getting a shout-out on the long form.
Well, this is
going to
be so hard for me.
It's not you playing favorites, so, like,
no, I'm just gonna
people
name,
won't be offended.
Yeah, I don't—all right. Just off the top of my head, I'm going to name some people, but I want people to know that I think so many people are good.
All of you really, listening truly. Are good and special.
I'm going to name some randos. Well, I got to name Stacey Hayashi.
Ooh,
Phenomenal commitment. The reason I put her in Poha, you know, I heard about her, heard she was really good, but then I ran into her once at the creek for Kaleidoscope, and we were just like chatting, and she told me about how she did Clown, for a year or whatever.
Whoa!
And I was like, whoa! And then she was hilarious in the show. She's got a Poha, or at the time it was called Broken Heralds.
She's
phenomenal. She brings so much honesty to her work, yes, that really like shocks people.
She's so great. I did a show with her. It was my first time improvising with her last week, and she was so great.
Yeah.
She did object work where she was holding a big tub of popcorn, and she didn't drop that thing for the whole scene. And otherwise, I know people who would have forgotten all about it, and it was so good.
Yeah. She had like a scene during the Poha shows. That people talk, and people would come up to me afterwards and be like, that scene with the chairs. And they would just say that, and everyone knew what we were talking about. And it was the scene that she did with Dave Raffalides, also very funny and great. That's another one, Dave Raffalides. Mm-hmm. Funny dude. I used to coach his indie team, Glory Days, back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And then did Poha. He crushed in Poha.
Yeah, just want to hear at least one more person.
Okay, I'm going to name like a bunch of names. I'll just fire them off
real quick.
Tom Mesger, Marit Tara, Caitlin Singh. I'm just going to name everyone in Poha.
This is Poha. You could just blank it.
Well,
and be like,
I'm just going to say, literally, I would love to name every single name in Poha because I think they're all, really every single person that group blows my mind. I just had a class, an Ash class of my own at Ash. There's some really funny people in that class who are just so strange. Let me think. Greg Roberts is a freak, and he knows it. Molly McCluskey, she's really, really funny. Very good for game. I'm trying to think. Guys, you're getting shout-outs today.
This is the shout-out.
Everyone,
pod.
If you want a shout-out, call me on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But don't call me. You're not allowed to call me, huh? I don't give out my phone number. But anyway, yeah, I'm trying to think who else. Every name has escaped me. All right.
Everyone in Poha.
Yeah, everyone in Poha.
And everyone in the Own It Herald
Own It Herald class. It was a very fun class. Second to last show, though, afterwards. I'm really calling them out. I just was like, that wasn't good, guys.
That's honestly.
And they seem to like
honest.
That note. But the last class was yesterday. They were, or not, won't be yesterday when this is released. But phenomenal. Phenomenal group.
Yeah. Anyway. What's like your noting style?
I like to side coach, period. End of story. Got a side coach.
Gotta.
I will usually be like, oh, we're missing an opportunity here. Sometimes I'll be like, what if you had said, I'll insert, like frame it, and that doesn't always click, right? And I'll like kind of sometimes do what you could have done. I'm like, this is one example, but I don't like to be like, this is what the game should have been, or the only way to do it is my point of view.
Right.
But I do like to give examples, and I love to do drills that work muscles.
Yeah. And you're straight up when people have like,
bad.
You're not afraid to say it?
If a show, especially in the shows, if it was like, that wasn't what we've worked on, I say it.
Good.
But I think I only had one show ever where I was like a little upset afterwards, and it was because somebody like straight up threw it all away, like almost like intentionally tanked the show.
Wow.
And then like afterwards, talked to the guy, and he was like, yeah, that was bad. I don't know. I'm so sorry. And he apologized, so it was fine.
All is forgiven.
All is forgiven. Yeah, I'm pretty honest. Code it, but I don't do it to hurt people either.
Right.
It's more like, you guys know what's good.
Yeah.
So.
And also, like, I'm here to
make you better.
My purpose here is to make you better and to give notes. Otherwise, I'm just someone laughing in a tech booth.
Mm-hmm. Which I love to do.
Oh, boy.
Cackle from the booth.
That's very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So this will be my last question.
Okay.
Like if you had, this doesn't have to be like improv move specific or anything like that, tips for improv, but just what would be your piece of advice to anyone listening to the podcast to be a better improviser, whether it's specific move things, like, you know, anything like that?
I think if you want to be a better improviser, you have to be a better listener than everybody else you're improvising with, and strive to be that. Because I think I started getting good and better at improv once I started really listening and treating my scene partner as if, like, everything they said mattered. And I think everyone listens about 50% in their scenes. But you have to get the whole 100 if you want to get good. So one time Christina Gassis gave me a note once. And I just shout out to every single teacher I ever had.
Shout out.
Something like, listen to your scene partner like you have a crush on them, where you hang on every word, mm-hmm. and every word means too much. And it just helped me. Like, it kind of was like a bit of a light bulb for me, because it made me realize I wasn't listening well enough.
Yeah.
So listen and really and care about the people in your scenes and your teammates. Listen and care.
Listen, care.
Yeah.
Send a minute-by-minute breakdown.
Please
of
do.
The way your show should go.
I that's all I want. I want an outline of what's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. And that's what improv is, baby.
Plan it.
All right, and that was a long-form conversation. Tune in the next episode when James will be your host. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and see you later, and mahalo, baby.
Mahalo, baby.
There you go.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.